This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Just after midday on Joy 94.9, there is a language warning for the next program, both for drug references and sexual references. So if that's not your thing, or if you have young ears with you listening to Joy 94.9, it may be a great idea to tune in for queries at 12:30. But right now, here's Patrick with Rainbow Crusaders.
Story of a very singular character who you know, lived their life in a very singular, uncompromising way, and very much like a Quentin Crisp did, or probably your Oscar Wilde did. You know, he's like he wasn't going to get married and settle down, you know, male or female, and sort of live a normal, conventional life. This is someone who you know, burning the candle at both ends, but was going for a heightened creative existence, and deciding to live his life for creativity in whatever manner he could express it, whether it was embroidering a cushion or making amazing clothes or directing videos, and before that it was fashion. He wasn't necessarily the most successful artist in the world. He didn't actually leave a huge legacy of work behind him, but he did leave his own life.
During the formative years of the post-punk movement in Australia, gutter glam was in. Like in England, there was a strange back and forth between the punks and the gay scene, although admitting it would be torture for the punks and sacrilege to the gays. This was the disco and punk wars. However, history has a tendency to generalise simply for ease, convenience and time. But one of the most supremely unorthodox figures inside the Melbourne punk and drag scene came in the form of Peter Vanessa Troy Davies, a gender-fluid artist, sometime musician, costume designer, music video director and makeup artist, to name a few of his talents. His life was veiled in shadow, theatre and extreme dichotomies, with only recently the release of the Melbourne International Film Festival's Ecce Homo, has aspects of the performance artist's life become clear. Although no longer with us, Troy's clues about his life led director Richard Lowenstein, mainly known for his music videos of such acts such as In Excess and U2, to uncover his friend's convoluted stories and unravel the mystery of Peter Vanessa Troy Davies. You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders on Joy 94.9.
She came all the way from America. She had a blind day.
Peter Davies was born into a very homophobic upbringing from his father. By all accounts, his father seemed to be an immensely vitriolic man, from the accounts of his other sons, who ironically all turned out to be same-sex attracted. It was when Davies' sister began taking birth control that Davies noticed that the pills were hormones. Richard Lowenstein, who directed the upcoming film Ecce Homo, had a long professional relationship and friendship with Troy, and through his years of knowing Troy, was unaware of the life as a woman called Vanessa until many years afterwards.
Basically, we met, both directors, me and Lynn Marie Milburn, met Troy, we ended up calling him by this stage, after his Vanessa stage, and it was in 1980, and so we met him when he'd already backed out of his transgender operation and sort of been through 5 years living as a woman from the age of like 15 onwards. And so, and at that stage, the post-punk movement was sort of gearing up and in full swing with the venues here like the Crystal Ballroom and everything, and he was one of the characters that hung around that scene, and he was very involved in fashion and art and design, and which was very sort of vibrant at that stage in a very experimental way. And we sort of just Lynn Marie met him first through a mutual friend, and then he sort of fell into helping out on some of the very early music videos we were doing in the 80s, And he sort of became the first sort of major appearance he sort of made in one of those music videos was the very first Hunters and Collectors Talking to a Stranger video, where he played a sort of little gremlin monster that basically dominates the entire video because the band aren't really in it. And through one and through the sort of connection, we'd hear these stories about his life as Vanessa, his life as a sort of a 15-year-old sort of Veronica Lake type, living as a woman and sort of doing everything, you know, like not just a transvestite dressing up, but basically spending these whole 24 hours. And it sort of, and one of the most interesting aspects of that story was how his father, who was a very straight homophobic man, very, very, you know, aggressive and down on his sons if they showed any sort of homosexual tendencies, or how his father suddenly fell in love with him as a woman, and but as a guy sort of would abuse him, and you know, not sexual abuse but violent abuse, and it seemed to be quite an extraordinary story how this very, you know, conservative man living in the outer suburbs of Melbourne sort of fell in love with his own son as a woman but couldn't relate to him as a man.
And so Peter now was Vanessa. Vanessa was an identity that Davies embraced for a strange reason. Initially it seemed that Davies was coming to grips with gender, but a large part of the living as Vanessa came from newfound affection from his father, affection that has many incestuous undertones. Whether Vanessa, though, was the truth for Davies was to be seen. It seems as though, as much as Davies enjoyed being Vanessa, Vanessa was a phase, and her existence did inform the later artistic life of Troy Davies.
So, and he had impeccable taste in clothing and fashion and style and makeup, and so, you know, as against what he would see around him in some of the drag clubs he'd work in Sydney, he would actually just appear as this, you know, in these amazing, I don't know where he'd get them or how he'd afford the clothes, sort of amazingly stylish 50s era sort of skirt suits and just, you know, looking like a dark-haired Marilyn. And you see a lot of these photographs in the film. And we didn't actually discover those photographs. I mean, it wasn't something he would sort of show us, but we didn't actually discover a lot of those photographs until after he'd passed away, and we opened up a box and there was these every sort of Friday and Saturday night as he was a 15, 16 year old heading into the city dressed as Vanessa, or as Vanessa, he would stop at the photo booth in Flinders Street Station and take a strip of shots of him and whoever he was with. And so there was this sort of huge archive of these sort of strips of the different stages of Vanessa, you know, sort of starting off quite a suburban look, and then as she gets more and more refined and more bombshellish, it just seemed like this extremely unique story. And then I mean, his dad suggested the sex change operation, and it was all, and he went on the hormones, and he went through sort of 3 years of hormone treatment, started to grow breasts and everything, and then his father passed away, and it was almost like the psychological story of his father passed away, and I'm sort of partly doing this for my father's love, you know.
From the death of Davies' father came Troy. Peter was the beginning, Vanessa the journey, and Troy was the reality. But even then, the word chameleon would be used to refer to Troy Davies as he pursued his continuing passion for creativity. Throughout his life, he not only worked as a makeup artist, a costume designer, as well as a performer in a lot of Richard Lowenstein's early music videos. This continued creativity seemed to be the mask as Troy covered one of the darkest periods of his life through humour and histrionics, so that only after his passing was it clear the reality of his childhood.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
There's an interesting part in the film where, with an old interview that was filmed in 1980, where he says that the interviewer asks him, you know, how did you feel being a woman? And he said, I don't believe I ever was a woman. You know, it wasn't really from the heart. It was for some other. I don't think he really had the self-analysis ability to actually work out, you know, what it was for. But it was so obvious that he was just resplendent in his father's attention and affection, and his father would take him down to the local pub and show him off to all the mates who would normally be puffed to bashing, you know, and they would say, you know, we didn't know you had a daughter. And then later on in the film, as we discover a third brother, another part of the puzzle is added to the story. Basically, both younger brothers, the one that was alive, Adam, and Troy, accused their older brother of rape over a period of 5 years, from, you know, from the time they were about 10 to the time they were 15. And I think it's really up to the audience to decide who's telling the truth and who's not.
You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders on Joy 94.9.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
Today's edition of Rainbow Crusaders contains some sexual and drug references and may not be suitable for younger ears.
You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders on Joy 94.9. We return now to discussing the life of Peter Vanessa Troy Davies. One of the unusual characteristics of Troy Davies was, after his abandoning of his life as Vanessa, came a heightened level of work, including, amongst all the other things, becoming a short-lived solo music artist. This is where the name Echo Homo came into play. The work that Troy did with Richard led to collaborations with Michael Hutchins from INXS, who starred in the music video for the first single, Motorcycle Baby.
It was more of a solo project, like it was the era where there were these sort of characters like that came out post Culture Club, like Marilyn and sort of, so it was like, or there was, I remember even there was a character, one of the members of Police turned into a character called Clark Kent that no one really knew who he was, but it was released a pop song. So it wasn't really a band, it was a concept song, and musicians would come in. Like he got involved with character Ollie Olsen, who he'd met on the set of Dogs in Space, and Michael Hutchins was made all the record company connections, and he was sort of like the executive producer, if you like, of the concept. And so Ollie came in, and he'd been working with Michael on Dogs, and they laid down some tracks with all the sorts of music and sort of themes that Troy and Ollie were both into, which is, you know, Prince related and Michael Jackson related, and sort of funk, sort of punk funk, if you like. And so Troy would come in and pretty much write the lyrics for this thing with the idea of him being the main performer and in under this, but not as Troy Davies, but as this concept Echo Homo, which was him, you know. And it translates, it's Latin for Behold the Man. And so it sort of became this, you know, two hit wonder, really, in a way. It's like the first song, Motorcycle Baby, had guest appearances with Michael Hutchins and some of the INXS members, and it did quite well in locally, you know. And so the record company, which was INXS's record company, gave him money for a second song called New York, New York.
Good evening. David Dinkins, he fought the good fight, finished the race, and kept the faith which he asked his supporters to keep through a long and hard-fought campaign. Victory is his, and the future of New York City, both literally and figuratively, will be in great part his to shape in the next 4 years.
By this stage, ego and all sorts of self-destruct things were kicking in, and he decided he wanted to do it in New York, and so they all flew people to New York, and then Troy started partying and blowing the money on this, that, the other, and they made the song, but he was getting, you know, the the ego of the fame and the ego of the attention was getting to him, and he was becoming, you know, he was burning bridges left, right and centre. And that sort of basically was the end of it, in a, you know, over a period of 1 or 2 years. And you know, it sort of, it never really happened again. I mean, people got, you know, the two videos were made and everything, and there was money for that. But the record companies basically realised that they were throwing money down a pit that wasn't really going to go anywhere, which was, you know, was really Troy's own self-destruct streak. He could have actually focused. He had great musicians. The second song, New York, New York, had guest appearances of Bono and Edge came on board, and, you know, sort of like, and they appear in the video, and, you know, he had some amazing opportunities and support and friends, and, you know, it was but he would just do things to blow it all out of the water, because there was a little, you know, he's a little bit more comfortable with the knowledge that he could blow things up or he could make things fail, rather than the sort of rather than the insecure nature of trying to succeed.
Above all, Troy Davies was known for his hedonistic lifestyle. As much as he was vibrantly creative, he was above all in it for life, first and foremost. His later diagnosis with HIV was almost performative. Sadly, however, the first few years of declaring his status was met with scepticism.
In the process of making the film, we dug up a lot of his very close, intimate friends, like we were as well. But in fact, George, the guy that actually did the transformation from Vanessa to Troy, and who was a hairdresser at the time, you know, you couldn't get two characters that were closer. They knew each other over a period of 35 years, and even he wasn't sure. You know, he wasn't sure. You know, he spent the first 10 years of Troy saying, I'm HIV, not sure if he was or not, you know, because it's like Troy had this history of lying and making things up. And of course, he was. And but it's like no one really knew properly, you know, what came out of Troy's mouth. So it was a very sort of interesting thing to discover that not even the close friends. I mean, we all had suspicions, but and I think, you know, I mean, a lot of them will be blown away by the film, because they won't actually, you know, it's 35 years later, and finally I think you have an answer of what Troy actually endured in the different stages of his life. And, you know, we don't necessarily try to put any cause and effect together, like was what he went through, was the sort of horror of what he went through or supposedly went through, was that a part of why he became, you know, Troy, or became how he was? Or, but, you know, there's lots of dysfunction there, even in the inability to sustain a conventional relationship over the years, that sort of really does with any of the three brothers. They all suffered the same problem, and there are things there that do ring very true in our research into people that have suffered such you know,
any trauma or abuse.
Trauma, yeah, and abuse at a young age. It's sort of like it does play havoc with how you sustain relationships through your life.
Troy initially was not going to let his diagnosis get him down. On the night he was diagnosed with HIV, Troy Davies was not going to let the hospital hold him back from going to a party. But the self-destruction that was seen previously during his tenure as Echo Homo took over towards the end of his life. After he developed full-blown AIDS, Troy started to give up on life.
I think it hit him quite hard, but he did. There's a great story in the film where he went into the hospital and, you know, for some other reason had to get a blood test, and they came in and told him, you're HIV positive. And but there was a party on that night, you know, and he was there in his white. It was a party on at the local club that he promised to go to, and so they wouldn't let him out of hospital, so he actually snuck out of the hospital window in his white coat with his drip and everything, and arrived at the party with in all his hospital gear, and it was just all accepted, you know, in that stage, the hospital gear, that sort of parties that were all clubs he was going to would have just accepted his hospital gear as some kind of costume.
You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders here on Joy 94.9. Troy Davies' life can be seen at the Melbourne International Film Festival in the film Ecce Homo. There's also a crowdfunding campaign for further release of the film internationally. To donate, please visit www.possible.com/Ecce Homo. About working with Troy Davies during his highly creative life, Richard had this to say.
There was this combination of incredibly stimulating, incredibly, you know, he'd make even the most straightest film shoot. You know, I mean, we were doing music videos, but they weren't necessarily, you know, it's still, people would take them seriously, and there'd be guys in suits from record companies all trying to sort of, you know, how can we make this song a hit, you know, and frowning when you did something a bit wacky or whatever. So it was still sort of serious business, but Troy was this great person to have on set, not only for visual ideas, but to cut through all that sort of seriousness, and so he'd make these things an incredible amount of fun, but also incredibly creatively vibrant, because there was always ideas coming up, shot ideas, costume ideas, you know, this will be great. He'd be able to take the most conservative rock star and convince them that, you know, to wrap their head in barbed wire or something, and this would be fantastic, and, you know, and a lot of times it would be fantastic.
But it seems every silver lining has a cloud.
At the same time, you know, he was a very vibrant, stimulant. At the same time, he could be incredibly frustrating because, you know, you'd say, okay, will you do makeup on this job or styling? And, you know, as you know, on a film shoot, it's 5 a.m. starts and everything, and Troy would still be in bed and he wouldn't be, you know, or wouldn't have his makeup kit or anything. And you sort of, and you've convinced the producer that this is the guy rather than, you know, the makeup lady that did Kylie or they had on the tours, like, no, we must have this Troy guy. So you'd gone on the line for him and, you know, someone go to pick him up and he'd still be in bed because he'd been partying all the night before, you know. It's just like he was incredibly frustrating. Or he'd fallen asleep on set, you know, and so Michael wasn't ready because Troy was having a nap in the back room or something, you know. It's like, so there was, you know, people were going on the line for him and to give him these opportunities, but sometimes it was just incredibly frustrating. But, you know, that was Troy.
Regardless, everyone who does remember Troy Davies saw a highly excessive individual who was relentlessly creative no matter what he was doing, even if it was to the creation of new personalities or new histories. Thank you for listening for Rainbow Crusaders. Thank you to Richard Lowenstein and the crew of Ecce Homo. Please stay tuned for queries.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.